Okay. So this year we're learning Perek Zeborer, third Perek Sanhedrin. So we're going to start the first Mishnah. I'm just going to do the first third of the first Mishnah because the second and third parts are not so relevant to what I want to talk about tonight. And then Mirtz Hashem in future dates we'll move on from here. And also, I'm willing to take requests if anybody has particular topics that the guys are learning or you want to talk about or whatever. Please let me know in advance. You know, at least an hour in advance. So, for sure. But I'm saying even within the Masechta, if somebody found out you're learning Sanhedrin and they asked you about something and you hadn't heard of it or whatever, and like, we're definitely willing to go there. So, let's take a look at the Mishnah. Dinei Mamonis Bishlosha. So we already started, the first parak began with this same line. Dinei Mamonis cases are judged with three judges, right? Basically, the way that Beis Din works, except for a few exceptions, is that Dinei Mamonis get three judges. Dinei Misos Beis Din get 23 judges. And certain major national events get 71 judges. That's what we call the real Sanhedrin. The word Sanhedrin is not Lashon HaKodesh. It's, I think, a Greek word that is never mentioned in the Torah. It's not even so much mentioned. It gets mentioned from time to time in the Mishnayos, but it was clearly adopted into the Jewish lexicon after, sometime between the Greek influence began and Klal Yisrael, and basically the term that we might have used in the Beis Din HaGadol or whatever, that became known as the Sanhedrin. So that's where the term comes from, but here we're saying that the Sanhedrin of 71, that basically only gets put into play when they're judging an entire Shevet, I guess like with the Pilegish Begiva situation, or when they're judging the Kohen Gadol or a Melech or something like that. Right, in Yeridachas, they're expanding the boundaries of Yerushalayim, they're expanding the Har HaBayis. Things like that require a major Sanhedrin decision, but everything else can be handled either if it's a capital crime by a Beis Din of 23 judges to decide whether the guy's going to be Chayav Misa, or it can be handled only by three judges, and most of the time, you take somebody to Beis Din, it's over a monetary dispute, and certainly Bizman HaZeh, when we don't do anything besides basic monetary disputes, all the Bati Din consist of three Dayanim. Okay, so that's where we start off. Dinei Mamonis Bishlosha. So how do you get to this? So this is Zeborolo Echod. This guy, meaning one of the litigants, chooses one. Zeborolo Echod, and the other litigant chooses another. Vishneim Borim Lohem Od Echod, Divi Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir's opinion is the two of them, the two litigants, choose the third. V'chachamim omrim, and the Chachamim say, Shnei Dayanin Borin Lehem Od Echad. They say it's not the two litigants who choose the third, but the two Dayanim who choose the third. So basically, Rashi cues us in here, but the Gemara is going to assume at the beginning, that when I said this guy, this litigant chooses one, and the other litigant chooses one, it's talking about one Beis Din, one entire group of three people, which is a little bit strange. Why would I have assumed that? I would have thought it means one judge, right? And that's Lemaisa. That's how the Gemara concludes that it's talking about one judge. So it's kind of hard to understand why we say Zevorlo Echad in the Havamin of the Gemara is talking about one Beis Din. So I'm going to try to see if we can figure it out. Based on the way we read the Gemara, maybe we'll be able to figure out why the Gemara thought that in the beginning. But for starters, that's just what the Gemara assumes, and to the extent that Rashi tells us what's going to happen, because the Gemara is going to be hard to understand because the Havamin is so weak. The Havamin is so hard to get, Rashi tells us. If you look in the only Rashi on the Mishnah there, Zeborolo Echad, Mashma Zeborolo Beis Din Echad. It implies that one guy chooses an entire court, Shehen Gimel, which means three judges. The Ze Echad, and the other guy also chooses an entire Beis Din, Hare Shisha, that equals six judges. Ushneim Borim Lehem Od Echad Hare Tes. And the two of them then choose a third Beis Din, which is nine judges. V'hainu dekamatama, mai zebor habitlos asagi. And that's what the Gemara is going to ask in the opening line in the Gemara. Wait a minute. Why are you telling me zebor lo echad, zebor lo echad, betlos asagi? Three judges is enough. You started off the Mishnah by saying, dinei mamonis bishlosha. Why do I want nine judges? What am I going to do with all nine? I only need three judges to judge dinei mamonis. So in the Havamin of the Gemara, they're assuming it's talking about selecting an entire Beis Din. And the Gemara goes with this for some time. Let's take a look in the Gemara. Skipping the rest of the Mishnah for now. Take a look in the Gemara. You see where it starts? Probably about 15 lines in. My zebor lo echad v'zebor lo echad b'tlas asagi. Like we said, three judges is enough. And the way Rashi wants to learn is, you're going to end up with nine judges, so why would you have a system which comes out with nine judges? So hachi ka'amar, this is what the Mishnah means to say. They add two very important letters, kisheh. Right, what does kisheh mean? When, right? When it happens. Kisheh zebor lo echad b'zden echad v'zebor lo b'zden echad. Under the circumstances when one chooses one Beis Din and the other chooses another Beis Din, they can't agree to which Beis Din they wish to go. So then, Shneim Borolohen Odechod. Then they have to get together and select a third Beis Din, meaning I want to go to the Beis Din of Cedarhurst and you want to go to the Beis Din of Woodmere, and we can't decide. So we have to put our heads together and come to the conclusion of which Beis Din we're going to go to, and it's not going to be the one you want and it's not going to be the one I want. It has to be a third neutral site. Right, right, exactly, exactly. Correct, that's what the Gemara is saying. The Habamina of the Gemara was, is okay, you choose the Basin of Cedarhurst, I'll choose the Basin of Woodmere, and then the two of us are going to get together and say, and we'd like to also be Mitzdarif, the Basin of Lawrence. Right, that's what we're going to do. And the Gemara says, that's not what it means. And not only that, but it's not telling us what you're actually supposed to do, which is implied by the Mishnah that says, how so? All right, he chooses a Beis Din, I choose a Beis Din, and then we agree on a third. Right? Sounds like that's l'chadchila. That's the way things are supposed to be. Right? But it's not actually so, says the Gemara. This is only under the circumstances where we can't come to an agreement. If I refuse to go to your Beis Din, you refuse to go to my Beis Din. So then we have to put our heads together and come to a mutual conclusion of a third possible Beis Din that we're going to attend. That's what the Gemara says. Now the Gemara, having concluded that that's what the Mishnah is talking about, the Gemara is going to have a couple of side points. One major side point is that really everyone gets to choose. Let's say I loaned you $1 million and now you are refusing to pay back and I want to take you to court. So you get to decide which court we go to. I loaned you $1 million. And now you have some kind of right of refusal here? You get to say, oh, I'm not going to that court, that's a corrupt Beis Din, or whatever your claim is. Saying like, I'll give you $1 million and we won't have to go to court. It's like, you get to decide what's going on here. Why do you have any rights under these circumstances? I'm suing you. I'm bringing you to court. So now you get to reject my court? Hard to understand. So the Gemara asked that kasha. The next line in the Gemara says, "Va'afilu lo ve'matzi ma'akev."
Why is this so hard to understand? You have it even in our house. You get and you sue, and you can say, "No, this is not the right court of jurisdiction," or the bezdin that you chose is your uncle is the right bezdin. Why shouldn't if you
right? Well, then we won't have anything to worry about. Technically, if he's actually your uncle, then the whole din is bottled. Saying.
You would
think. All right, right, so.
Why wouldn't you be able to choose? You're trying to be mostly from the other person. You should at least have the right to choose the venue. Right. It's not such a skittish to say that just because I'm moneying $1 million from you, that you should have the right to choose. Should have the person that you're looking to get from should have more of a right to choose the best in.
Well, it depends why I'm looking to get the money from you. Meaning, if there's clearly a Baal Chesed and there's clearly a recipient of Chesed, so the recipient doesn't necessarily have any rights at this point. Oh, we didn't say he's a Russia. We didn't say he's a Russia. But we're saying is that you have to remember in Jewish loans before the invention of the Heter Iska, right? This was a tremendous Chesed that people did for each other by lending them money. Listen. I'm not, even a non-expert when it comes to financial matters, but I understand that money that's rightfully mine that I don't have on me is money that's not doing anything for me, right? And that's a major loss on my part. When you loan someone money interest-free, you're losing money. Saying the Malbim loses money on every loan, technically, because, I mean, officially in any kind of business model, money that you have is supposed to be making money for you. That's why nobody, right? That's why you lend with interest, right? I'm saying it's not. That's why also everyone gets upset when they said, "How come it says in last week's parsha, no, la nachri sa shich, you're supposed to charge interest to a nachri, you're just not allowed to charge interest to a Jew." The Goyim were always very upset about this, And, you know, that's the you know, the Shylock, the model of the Jewish, greedy Jewish moneylender who charges ribbis to non-Jews. The Ramban explains. He says it's not a knock on non-Jews. He said everyone in the world accepts lending with interest as a valid business practice. Right? Everyone. I have no grudges whatsoever against the bank that holds the mortgage on my house. I did not have the money to put down for my whole house. And they did me a tremendous service by giving me a ton of money so that I could buy a house. I'm not angry at them that, you know, like most of the money that I'm paying them back, I don't actually owe them. Saying I understand that's the way the business world works. They did me a tremendous favor, and in return, they want to make some money off the deal. That's not a bad practice. The Ramban says it's not about making a valid business practice. It says because the pasuk cues us in. It says, why don't you lend a Jew with interest? V'chei achicha imach. Because your brother has to be able to live with you. The reason you don't lend Beribis is that he's your brother. Because if your brother came for a loan and you said, you know what, I'd love to help you out. So what are we talking, 4.5%? Saying, then your brother's going to be, hello? Like, I could have gone to the bank for that. You know, your brother comes to you for a loan. You give him a loan, interest free. You know, if some guy who's not your brother comes for a loan, so then you say, okay, 4.5%, but whatever. Saying that's understandable. So he's saying that when you do some of the chesed of lending them money, you are. It's definitely a major form of tzedakah. And we don't necessarily say that the recipient of the tzedakah has the right to say what's going to be in the court. Right? Rashi quotes the lashon of the pasuk, Eved Lova Leish Malvid. There's a cloud that the Lova is a shtickel Eved to the Malvid. Right? He doesn't have the upper hand when it comes to making these decisions. Listen, if he's right, he's right. And as we'll see, it's not really as different of a dispute as we're making it out to be right now. But just hold the thought, and I think in the end it'll become somewhat clear. So as you already mentioned before, so the Gemara asked the Kasha, afilu love matzim ake, v'ha amar ablazer, lo shanu ela malve, avalove, kofen osol v'dan b'ira. We have a different case. This Rav Elazar did not make this statement regarding our situation. Rav Elazar was talking about a case, as Rashi tells us, that I am suing the Lova for the money, and I want to go to the local Beis Din, and he wants to go to the Beis Avad. He wants to go to the major Sanhedrin Katana, whatever, the major Beis Din of the city. Like, I want to go to the Beis Din of Cedar Earth, and he says, no, we're going to the township of Hempstead. We're going to the courthouse over there, you know, where the real, you know, big time judges reside. So it depends. If the Malva wants to go to the Beis Avad and the Lova doesn't want to go, then the Malva can force the Beis Avad, the Lova to go to the Beis Avad. But if the Lova wants to go to the Beis Avad and the Malva says, we have a perfectly good Beis Din right here in Cedars, right here in Woodmere, so then the Kofen Osov Adan Be'iro. So then you can force the Lova to go to the local Beis Din, and he can't argue that we go to the Beis Avad. So that's the Gemara's Kasha. They're saying that the Mishnah says flat out, Dinim Amanus Bishlosha, and each one apparently can reject the other one's choice for a Beis Din. But really, the Lova can reject it? It doesn't sound like that from what we've learned in the name of Rav Elazar. So the Gemara has two answers to this question. So the first answer that you mentioned was, Kida Amar Rav Yochanan, like a similar statement of Rav Yochanan later on the Amid, Ba'ar Kol Shebesuria Shanu. We're talking about our Kol Shebesuria. Hard to say exactly what they are. Different Rishonim say different things. I'll just go with Rashi for now. He says they weren't quite Dayanim. They weren't quite real Dayanim. They weren't experts in the law. They were guys who, you know, they were Yodei Sefer. They knew a little bit, right? And the Yad Ramah wants to say, nah, they don't know anything about Jewish law. They know a little bit about finances, and they, you know, so it's almost together a secular court in that sense. Right, so if the guy wants to take you to Arkos, if he wants to take you to an imitation Beis Din, and you want to go to a real Beis Din, even if you're the Lova, you get to take him, you know, to the Beis Avad. You can reject his Beis Din choice if his Beis Din is actually subpar. So this really solves the problem. Like you said before, like he wants to go to this Beis Din, and you know there's a qualitative problem with the Beis Din, so that's the Geder Arkos, Shebesuria, like in Surya, they used to have these courts because there weren't that many learned individuals. So you have the right to reject his choice of Beis Din, even though you're the Lova. even though you technically have the lower hand in these types of decisions, and the malva has the upper hand, but still, you have the right to reject the malva's choice of a second-class beis din. You know, he can choose a second-tier beis din, but he can't choose a second-class beis din. Meaning he can choose the local dayanim. They all have whatever, yadin smicha. So they all are real dayanim, but they're not the guys who get all the big shilas. You know, so that's the beis avad. So you can say, listen, these guys are qualified dayanim. I want to go to them. And if you're the malva, you can force them. So you can force a guy to go a second tier beis din, but our kos is literally a second class beis din. They're not like in the first class, second tier. They're all the way down at the bottom there. So you can't force the guy to go to that. That's answer number one. And answer number two is a little bit different. It's going to shed some light on what's going on here. So he says, Rav Papam, Rafilu Tema Mumchin, even if they are officially experts, they're officially, they have smicha, Kigon, Beidina, de Rav Huna, de Rav Chizda, de Ka'amale, Mi Kamatrach Naloch. For example, the Bate Din of Rav Huna and Rav Chizda, where he can say back to the guy, is it really a bother for you? Is it really difficult for you to go either to the Beis Din of Rav Huna or Rav Chizda? So Rashi there says, what does it mean, Rav Huna and Rav Chizda? Shishneim b'makom echad. The two of them were basically in the same location. One was on this block, one was two blocks over. But nothing major in terms of the distance between the two Batei Din, and they were both obviously expert dayanim. And therefore, if the Malva wants to go to the Beis Din of Rav Huna, and the Lova wants to go to the Beis Din of Rav Chizda, the Lova can say, listen, when it comes to this, I'm just as qualified as you are to make this decision because they're two blocks away. Like, it's really a big tircha for you to go to the excellent Beis Din that I'm suggesting, which is two blocks from your suggestion. So then the Gemara says, if location is not an issue, he can't reject the other guy's choice for a Beis Din. He can reject, the other guy's choice for a Beis Din, even though he's the Lova. So again, the two exceptions that we have so far is number one, if the Malva wants to go to a second-class Beis Din, our Kalisha Besuria, and number two, if the two Batei Din that they're arguing over are right near each other anyway. Okay, so there's a little bit of a side point that I wanted to discuss just because it's an interesting topic and it's somewhat relevant to our discussion. The second Tosfos on the Amud, Kigon Beis Din Rav Huna Rav Chizda, Deka'amar Leh Mai Kametrach Nalach, where it's basically we said, what's the difference to you? I'm bothering you by making you go two more blocks? So, Pirush HaKuntres, Shohayu B'makom Echad, they were in the same place. V'lo Nihira, it's not correct, it's not an enlightening statement. D'ha Amrinan, he quotes the Gemara in Erevin, we'll see shortly, D'Rav Chizda, Lohaya More Lefnei Rav Huna, Afilu Be'asa B'kudcha, V'kol Shekein, D'din Lohaya Ose B'fonav. Rav Chizda would never paskin even a Be'asa B'kutcha Shaila in front of Rav Huna. Any idea what that is? Be'asa B'kutcha is the Talmudic way of saying the most simple of dinim, right? So I said to the guys when we did this, I said, if your mom ever asks you if you want a cheese omelet, she say, Be'asa B'kutcha, I want a cheese omelet. Meaning, obviously I do. Why do I say that? Because a Be'a is an egg and Kutach is the Talmudic version of Yo Crunch. You ever see the Yo Crunch in the supermarkets? It's basically a yogurt-based thing with, you know, bread croutons in there. So, no joke, the halachos of what bracha to make on salad croutons comes from the sugya of Lechem Asu Lekutach in the sixth parak in Brachos, where we talk about bread that was made specifically as a crouton may have a bracha of mizonos versus bread that was made into bread, and then when the restaurant, you know, didn't need the bread anymore because it was already stale. They said, "All right, we're halfway to a crouton already. So that bread remains hamotzi because it wasn't lechem ha'asui lekutach. It was its own. It was really just bread lechem ha'asui lechem, and it just, you know, went the way of unsold bread. So kutach was a very common Babylonian food, and that's the standard dairy food when it comes to Talmudic lore. We're talking about kutach. Interesting, I don't know why I care about this, but I care about strange things. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah talks about what we would call today Chol of Yisrael. It said, they have a list of things which are Asur ve'en Yisur miser hana. So one of them is the Chol of Shechol of Anachri ve'en Yisrael roeu. Right? Anachri milks a cow, and there's no Jew supervising. So the Gemara says, what are we worried about? So they said, well, maybe he substituted milk of a non-kosher animal, of a pig, of a camel, whatever, in place of milk of a cow. So the Gemara says, no problem. You can just tell by the tint. Apparently the cow's milk, as we've come to know and love, has a very whitish color to it, whereas these non-kosher animals have a yellowish or a greenish tint to them, and you can just tell by looking at it that it's not kosher. So they says, just look. She says, no. We're talking about where they use it to make cheese. So he says, no problem. The kosher milk, it curdles into regular-looking cheese, and the non-kosher milk doesn't really curdle so well. So they said, no. There's going to be a different possibility of a mixture, and maybe they mixed in some of the non-kosher milk. So they come to the conclusion that maybe there's a mixture of kosher and non-kosher milk, and then they're going to make cheese out of it, and there's still some non-kosher milk in there, so it's a problem. So if you look in the whole Gemara, some friend of mine once pointed this out to me, the one chashash they never uncover is, maybe you'll drink the milk. It says nobody in the times of the Mishnah and Gemara ever drank milk. It was not done. They didn't drink milk as a beverage. So that's whenever the Gemara is talking about basar v'chalav or things like that, they always talk about gvina, kutach, things like that. They never really talk about chalav. So, I don't know, just a side point. So here also, when they want to know, the simplest of dinim, it's beya sabakutcha, an egg, beya, and kutach, which is this yogurt. So what does that mean? It means that if your mom asks you if you want to have a cheese omelet, so maybe not. Omelets come from eggs, which grow inside chickens, which we're knowing that it's fleishik, right? And milk is obviously milchik, makes it into cheese. So somebody comes over to Rav Chisda and says, Rav Chisda, am I allowed to have a cheese omelet, or is that a problem of basar v'chalav? So Rav Chisda might say something like, I've been to kindergarten, and the answer is yes, you can have a cheese omelet, it's kosher, right? So Rav Chisda, the answer is, would not say that. Rav Chisda would say, I'm sorry, I can't answer that question because my Rebbe Rav Huna is in town, and you have to go ask him that, Shaila. So Rav Chisda would never paskin even the simplest of halachos in the presence of Rav Huna. So you're telling me, says Tosfos, that he set up a Beis Din right next door to Rav Huna's Beis Din? Like, they're not going to be asking him those shilas in the Beis Din. They're going to be asking him serious, hard shilas. So he's setting up a Beis Din next door to Rav Huna? Impossible. Impossible. Just parenthetically also, what types of shilas were they asking Rav Huna and Rav Chisda? Only Dini Mominus basic shilas. And you know, any idea why? Because he was Rav Huna. He wasn't Rabbi Huna. Smicha was gone. Saying by the time the second and third generation Babylonian Amoraim existed, there was no more Smicha. Basically, there's three titles you'll find given to a Tana or an Amora in the Mishnah of the Gemara. You'll find the title, which is the most common, Rabbi, which is like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, and, you know, or actually that's a terrible example because that's Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, sorry. So you have, you know, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yochanan, you know, and all the other rabbis, right? So all the Tanoim had smicha, kimat. I think all the Tanoim had smicha. So they were all rabbi. That means real smicha, not like the thing you hang on your wall, saying that's ish mi pi ish ad Moshe Rabbeinu. That means that Moshe Rabbeinu gave smicha to Yoshua and 70 Zekanim, and one of those individuals gave smicha to your rebbe, and down the line until you got smicha from him. So there was a discussion in the early 1500s about renewing the smicha. They gave smicha to a few famous people like the Maribe Rav and Rabbi Yosef Karo and the Alshech HaKadosh, I think, got smicha also, but it died out within a generation or so. You know, it's a great discussion, but not for today. Lisa, right. So they did not know. So they were not that kind of mumchen anymore. They couldn't be don. They could only be don hodos valvos. They couldn't be don any dine knasos, and they certainly could not give malchus, which is historically accepted as the reason they wanted to renew the smicha in the 1500s, because what had just happened to all of the... Why did all those rabbis end up in Tzfat? Partially, why did Rabbi Yosef Karo end up in Tzfat? Because of the Spanish Inquisition. His family was from Spain. They ran away. You know, they made their way across the world almost till they got to the Middle East and settled in Sfat. And many Jews who had feigned becoming Christians in order to escape from, you know, from the Inquisition, were feeling very guilty about that, having, you know, learned the eighth parak of the Masechta Sanhedrin and knowing they should have actually given up their lives, or at the very least left. You know, easier said than done, leaving behind all of their worldly possessions. But they knew they had done the wrong thing, and they felt that they were chayiv kares for what they did. And they know there's a Mishnah in the third parak in Makkos which says that if you're chayiv kares and you get malchus, it could be machaper for the kares. So they wanted that kapara badly. They did not want to go up to Shemayim and find out that they were chayiv kares. So they said, we can't get malchus because nobody has smicha. You can't give Malkus without Smicha, so they talked to the Maribe Rav, who at the time was really the Gadol Hador, about trying to renew the Smicha and giving a Beis Din enough Musmachim that they could give Malkus. And that was the major drive behind trying to renew the Smicha. But Rav Hun and Rav Chizda were only being Dan Hodos and Havos. They couldn't be Dan anything else.
The highest level Smicha nowadays.
Right. So, but that's the highest we get, meaning they learn Choshen. If you learn Choshen Mishpat, they'll give you Yad and Yad and Smicha. But that's the only thing you can be done without Smicha, right? You would be called a Mumcha as the level of the Gemara is discussing right now, but you wouldn't actually be a Mumcha with a capital Mem. You'd be like a Mumcha with a lowercase Mem, that like the Gemara is saying, Rav Hun and Rav Chizda, I'm sure they were experts in Kol Tarakula, but for technical purposes, they couldn't be done anything besides Odolos and Havos. So back to Tosus's Kasha, so he says, how could it be that Rav Chizda set up a Beis Din anywhere near Rav Huna? So Tosus just gives a very simple teretz, which we'll go with. I underlined it. Here it says, V'nira li, shehayu smuchim zelazeh chutz l'gimel parsos. They were close to each other, but they were at least three parsos away. I did not do my homework and find out how big a parsa is. I apologize. But whatever the distance is, they were enough of a distance away that it wasn't called b'makom rabo. It wasn't called paskening a shayla in the area of your Rebbe. So therefore, Rav Chizda's Beis Din must have been far enough away that it wasn't right considered being dan in mora halacha b'fnei rabo, but it was close enough that the Lova can say to the Malva, really, you're not going to walk the few blocks or the few miles over to the other Beis Din? So you're going to be that way, right? That's the compromise that Tosos has to come to. Rashi just says, I'm Bob Dafka that Rashi disagrees with Tosos. He just says they were b'makom echad, they were in the same area, meaning they weren't far enough apart that one guy could claim it was a tircha. And Tosos is just specifying that means at least three parsos away. Well, it's worse. It's worse. I hear. But the problem is he then going to have to recuse himself if it comes down to it, if both Bali didn't say, we refuse to accept any type of compromise or any type of pshara. We want psak halacha. That's it. Right. So that's the first comment you made. Yeah, I think that's a valid, you know, it's a valid argument. I didn't see anybody says that, but I think it makes a lot of sense. You know. So, but Lamaisa, this is Tosus's problem, and I just thought it was kedai to see the Gemara that Tosus is quoting. If you look, if you flip over the handout, it's this is Erevin Samach Beis and the Beis. And it's about two-thirds of the way down the line, smack in the middle of the line, two-thirds of the way down the lines of the Gemara, smack in the middle of the line, Amar Le Abaye L'Rav Yosef. Amar Le Abaye L'Rav Yosef. So he says, Abaye says to Rav Yosef, Kai Malon, we paskin, Mishnas Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Kav Venoki. The Mishnah, the teachings of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, are straight, they like to form a straight line, and they are clean. They are, meaning we always paskin like him. It's interesting, there are actually two Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakovs. But I'm not sure how they decide which one is which. But the any time you find a Mishnah that teaches us Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov's opinion, that's the halacha. It's a rule. And V'am Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, halacha Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. And that's what Shmuel agrees as well. So now he asks the question, Mahu la'oruye b'makom rabo. Let's say there's a Mishnah with three opinions, and the third opinion is the opinion of Reb Elazar ben Yaakov. And now someone asks you, so how do we paskin in this Mishnah? So on one hand, it's a rule. You always paskin like Reb Elazar ben Yaakov. So am I really teaching you anything when I say the halacha is like Reb Elazar ben Yaakov? No, because that's just the rule. But on the other hand, you don't know the answer, so I am teaching you something. So they said, am I allowed to tell someone in front of my Rebbe that the halacha is like Reb Elazar ben Yaakov? So Amar Lei, afilu be'esa b'kutcha, I think he just adds the word e bo minei merav chizda kol shani deravuna lo oruye. I think he takes out the v. So he says, even a case of be'esa b'kutcha, which is simpler than knowing that we always paskin like Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, so he says, still, Rav Chizda would never have paskin that kol zman that Rav Huna was alive and present. So this is where Tosfos is getting his ammunition from. The Gemara says clearly, as seemingly a prototype for the concept of mor halacha b'fnei rabo, that you're not allowed to paskin even the simplest of shilas, and kol shekein something which is totally on a somewhat esoteric Talmudic rule of Mishnah Reb Elazar ben Yaakov Kavanaki. You're not allowed to paskin any halachos, even if there's a rule that tells you, right, there are tons of rules like that. We say halacha k'rabi Akiva mechaveiro velo mechaveirov, right, halacha k'rabi mechaveiro, right, mimosa vayivarov ve'ela chilksa kibasroi, all these different Talmudic rules that we have that, like, pretty much lead you to know what the halacha is if you know the rule, but still that's considered a psak halacha way more than are you allowed to eat a cheese omelet. So therefore, he gives the example. He says that Rav Chizda would never even tell anybody they're allowed to eat a cheese omelet if Rav Huna was around. So that's the basis for it. And lest you think that this is only the chumrah of Rav Chizda, so Abaye quotes the same idea in a different context. If you flip over the page, you have Ksuvis Daf Samach Amid Beis, and in Ksuvis Daf Samach Amid Beis, it's less than halfway, probably about a third of the lines down, a little more. It's right next to the Tosfos, Divar Maskel, the Hilchasa. First words on the line are Amar Abaye. So Amar Abaye, Hai Milsa de Amar Rabbanan, Afilu Be'esa B'kutcha, Lo Lishre Inish B'makam Rabbeh. So he says, that which the rabbis taught us, that even Be'esa B'kutcha should not be taught, should not be paskin in front of your Rebbe. So he quotes it here not as the chumrah of Rav Chizda, but of the teaching of the rabbis. So you see kind of that Abaye accepts this as the normative halacha. It's not some chumrah that Rav Chizda took upon himself. So he says, so just to finish the idea, so he says, lo mishum de mechse ke'afkirusa. It's a Lashon Hefker. It's not like he looks like he's just throwing away his Rebbe and basically saying, I'm the new kid on the block, you listen to me, saying it's not because of chutzpah that it's arrogant to paskin in the presence of your Rebbe. Ela mishum de lo mistaya milsa lameimra. He's not going to succeed, he's not going to have the proper siyata dishmaya to paskin correctly. That's a very interesting thing Abaye is saying here, which is worthy of a lot of discussion, which we're not going to get into now. But basically, Abaye says, to paskin any shiloh, even the smallest of shilohs, you need a certain level of siyata d'shmai. Saying a posek always has to know that whatever he's learned is a gift from Shemayim. Right? A Kadosh Baruch Hu chooses to allow human beings to understand his Torah, which is the Chochmah Elokus. That's not something which is technically supposed to happen. It's a gift from Hashem that he gives us the ability to understand his Torah. But he can give it to us, he can take it away from us. And if we want to paskin a shiloh, the number one thing we need is siyata d'shmaya. We have to have certain help from Hashem in order to paskin the shiloh. And if we don't have that siyata d'shmaya, we always have to be choshesh that we missed even the simplest of halachos, even a beferisha sif and shulchan aruch, a beferisha gemara, a mishnah, a pasuk, could be anything. If we don't have siyata d'shmaya, we don't know what our psak is going to be. There's a very interesting comment by the Netziv. The Netziv asks a question. He says, we know that by the time the Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash, was destroyed, when the Babylonians came into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, there was no Aron Kodesh in there. Anybody know what happened to the Aron Kodesh? Right, so they hid it underneath the Beis HaMikdash, and there it stays. We haven't found it yet. But when was it hidden? Which Melech hid it? Yoshio, right? Yoshio was not the last king of the Jews. He wasn't even the second to last king of the Jews. He wasn't even the third to last king of the Jews. So saying, what's he doing? He's hiding the Aron Kodesh years before the Churban Beis HaMikdash ever came to fruition. So he could have found out that the Babylonians laid siege to Yerushalayim, so Tzidkio could have hidden it. Why does Yoshio hide it? Yoshio lived a great life. Yoshiyahu was the great leader of the tshuva movement. As the Navi tells us, there had never been, nor would there ever be, a tshuva movement like the days of Yoshiyahu. Right? And Yoshiyahu died on the upside. Yoshiyahu died because he went to war against Par Necho, thinking the Jews were completely righteous. Yet he hid the Aron Kodesh. So the Netziv explains, based on Chazal, but the Netziv explains an interesting chiddush. He says that there's a reason why the Sanhedrin always sat in the Lishkas Hagadas. Not just because it was cool. Because when you come to the Beis HaMikdash, I mean, it's really cool. You come to the Beis HaMikdash, and everything you've been reading about your whole life is there. Like, you have the Kohanim B'Avodasam and the Leviim B'Duchanim B'Shirasam. And not only that, but all the greatest, like nowadays, people like to go Gedolim hopping and Rabbi hopping. There was no hopping. The Sanhedrin parked themselves and all of their great students in the Lishkas HaGadus, in the central office of the Beis HaMikdash, and when you would go to the Beis HaMikdash, you could see the Sanhedrin at work. And why do they have to be there? Not only that, but if there was no Sanhedrin sitting in Lishkas HaGadus, no one else in all of Israel could be Dan Dinei Nefashos. They had to be there in order for everyone else to sort of leech off of their koach in order to. You know, be Dan Dinei Nefashos. If they would pick themselves up and go, then even the same Beis Din that yesterday was being Dan Dinei Nefashos today could not. And so why did they just park themselves in the Beis HaMikdash like that? Why couldn't they set up shop anywhere? So one of the answers is that the Beis HaMikdash wasn't just the center for the Avod, it was also the center for Torah. And not only that, it was the center for Gemilas Chasadim. It was really the center for all three, Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim. Right? But it was the center of Torah and the Siyata Dishmaya, in order to paskin the most difficult of questions, came to the Sanhedrin via the Aron HaKodesh. The Aron HaKodesh obviously represented Torah, and the koach that Hashem brought into the world to paskin these difficult shilas came from the Siyata Dishmaya that stemmed from the Aron HaKodesh. And Yoshio saw prophetically that there was going to be a time that the Sanhedrin was going to have to paskin these impossible shilas without the aid of the Aron Kodesh. And he said, I have to prepare the Jewish people for this. And he bedafka took the Aron Kodesh, he hid it on site, he hid it somewhere nearby, so that they would still receive a certain amount of that divine inspiration in paskening the shilas, but not so much that it would be a huge, it would be a huge shock to their systems when they all sat down to learn in Yavne and nobody knew it was flying. Saying Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai moved the center of Torah from the Beis HaMikdash itself, this isn't the second Beis HaMikdash, but to Yavne, and when they all sat down to learn, they no longer had the Siyata Dishmaya of even being in the proximity of the Aron Kodesh. So that would have been the greatest shock and such a sense of yeush to the Sanhedrin to have to then act like, you know, almost feel like they knew nothing compared to what they used to know. And therefore, he tried to ease them into it by hiding the Aron Kodesh somewhere a little bit, I guess, I don't know, on-site or off-site, but somewhere in the proximity, but not right there where they would get the full effect. And Lamaisa, the Vilna Gaon says, that's why we end off all our Shmona Esrei's, the Sein Chalkeinu B'Sora Secha. Well, what's the Indian Sein Chalkeinu B'Sora Secha to Sheibana Beis HaMikdash? One's Karbanos, one's learning. So the Vilna Gaon says, no, the Beis HaMikdash was also the Torah center of the world. The Siyata Dishmaya that emanated from the Beis HaMikdash brought more Torah into the world than all the Amelis that everybody could have done. And the Torah that we're learning now is not nearly as great as it could be if we were living with a Beis HaMikdash. And it's important to keep that in mind. So Lamaisa, Abaye is saying here that if, when it comes to a simple question that everyone knows the answer to, there's no chutzpah in paskening that obvious question that everybody knew from the time they were in kindergarten to paskening that in the presence of your Rebbe. It's a different problem. It's that HaKadosh Baruch Hu might not give you the siyata d'shmaya you need. And without that, you might not even remember if it's mutter to eat a cheese on it. Important thing to keep in mind. So now the question becomes, really? I'm not allowed to tell someone that eggs aren't fleishik. I have to tell people that I'm not allowed to say that eggs are parv. So am I allowed to then ask my 3-year-old kid to tell him? Saying he's not chayiv in mitzvos. Maybe he's allowed to tell the guy. Or do I have to send him to the Rebbe so that he can look like a fool and ask the shayla? Saying, you know what I mean? That's really the thing? So the Rishonim are not sold. Rashi is sold on it, but the other Rishonim are not sold that's definitely the pshat. And if you look, it's the same Tosos in both places, the Tosos in Ksuvis and Tosos in the Gemara in Erevin. We just saw Be'esa B'kutcha, Afila Be'esa B'kutcha. So they quote from the Aruch. The Aruch was an early Rishon. He was the first Talmudic dictionary. Came, you know, probably about 800 years before Marcus Jastrow. And he wrote a dictionary of the Gemara, but with, you know, his own explanations of Gemaras that use these terms. So in the Erech of Kutach, one of the things he tells you what Kutach is, and then he goes through a few Gemaras. He's like, you know, the famous saying Be'es Abakutcha. So he says, what does it mean that you're not allowed to paskin Be'es Abakutcha in front of your Rebbe? It really means that you're not allowed to paskin whether or not eggs are milchik or fleishik. So he says that's impossible. He says, you're allowed to tell people the simplest of dinim, even in the presence of your Rebbe. He says, it's talking about, what if you shecht a chicken and there's an egg inside? So he says, so that is a Beferisha Gemara in Beitza, and it's also a Beferisha Sif in Shulchan Aruch and Simon Pei Zayin. So, but there are some complications, meaning, If anybody ever learned Yoredeya, so it's in the, you know, if you tried learning Basar B'Chalav, it's in the opening siman of Hilchos Basar B'Chalav. They talk about Beitza that's Nimtza B'Tarnagolas, and there are a few qualifying issues. If the Chelbon is properly formed and the Chelmon is properly formed, and if it's maybe yes or not Me'ura B'Gidin still, if it's still attached to the insides of the chicken, or no, let's say the entire Krum HaElyon is already formed, the shell is properly formed, and it's literally ready to go to the store. And then everyone agrees that it's mutter. So the guy never knew this. He said, listen, I shechted a chicken. I know the chicken after I shechted it is fleishik. So maybe everything inside it is fleishik. So then you tell him, no, the chicken, the eggs are still parah. Right? So there are some details to that particular shiloh, although, again, it is beferish in Shulchan Aruch. It's not something which really requires a horoah schacham. You're not considered a mora horoah if you paskin that shiloh, since it's a beferish asif in Shulchan Aruch. You're just a guy who happened to have read that line in Shulchan Aruch. So, no, I'm saying, like, there are certain things that's a judgment call on the part of the Rav. You come to the Rav, you say, what's the din under these circumstances? You say, well, the Shulchan Aruch says this, is machlokes shach and taz, does it apply under your circumstances? And I learned up the sugya, and I think the taz is right here. I think the shach is right here. That's what we call a horoas chacham. He paskin the shayla based on not only the words that he read on the books, but on his understanding of which opinion is the more accepted one, lahalacha. Right? So that's a real horoas chacham. Here, it's what we call beferish. Here it says in the Gemara, those eggs are parv. So okay, so it says it in the Gemara, so that's already an iffy issue. Not everyone knows it, but in fact the Gemara says it's parv. So is that called a horoas chacham or not? So the Aruch says that's what you're not allowed to do in front of your Rebbe. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about are eggs fleishik or parv. That's too simple not to paskin in front of your Rebbe. Ironically, lahalacha, the Shach and Taz, I think, both bring down that the minhag is if you shecht the chicken and there's an egg inside, you should treat it like a fleishik. So, ironically, the Aruch's example of the simplest din in the world, everyone knows its power of lahala. The minhag is to treat it like it's fleishik. So, just, you know. side point. But so getting back, Tosfos wants to say that it's not talking about this really, really simple question. It's a question that not everybody knows, but it is a beferish adin. It's not a horos chacham. Okay, so this is all tangential from the main discussion of the Gemara, which says that Rav Huna had a Beis Din right next to Rav Chisda. Tosfos says it had to be some distance away, 3 parsos, so that it wasn't considered Mora Halacha B'Fnei Rabo. Okay, yes. Right, so apparently for some reason, and we'll try to explain this shortly a little bit better, but for some reason that's not called moving the jurisdiction. That's considered the same thing. Meaning I want to go to this one, the other one is right here, so I'm not trying to get you to do anything that you shouldn't be doing yourself. So we'll see, this plays a major role in perhaps understanding the flow of the Gemara. We'll try to get back to it shortly. So now the Gemara basically asks 2 kashas, and they say there's no way that this is the pshat in the Mishnah. Up until now, we were understanding it's a bidyevid case. If we can't agree what basin to go to, we'll come together on the third. The Gemara slugs this up with 2 kashas. One of them is not even a kasha; it's just saying you're wrong. But he says like this. So he says the first one is saying the first kasha is like this. Tanan, we have a Mishnah, our Mishnah. The chachamim are shnei dayanim borim lahem orecha. The 2 dayanim choose the third Beis Din. So basically, the Dayanim, I wanted to go to the Beis Din of Cedarhurst. You wanted to go to the Beis Din of Woodmere. So we both, according to the Chachamim, those 2 Batei Din will get together and select the third Beis Din? Like, how's that going to work out for you? Right? I said to my guys, I'm like, so you walk into a Nike store and you say, listen, you guys are in the sneaker business, but we all know your sneakers are terrible. So could you perhaps recommend a good sneaker for me that I can go to a different store and buy? Like, good luck with that. You know, they're not going to help you out after you make a comment like that. So he says, V'isol kedaikta kidam rinan Beis Din. If you think we're talking about selecting a Beis Din basar de pasle luhu azlu v'biru luhu beidina achrini? What, after you pasle that Beis Din, they're just going to be like, oh, can we recommend a better one for you since we're obviously terrible? Right? That's what, it's not going to happen. Right. So I just think. Right, but I think that like still it's a little bit iffy. So this is not, again, it doesn't slog up the pshat, but it gets you thinking, like, really? And the Chachamim actually recommend that? The Chachamim recommend that you going to the Beis Din and telling them your story? Like it doesn't sound so good. Right? And then the second kasha is just you're reading it wrong. So he says, Va'od my zebor lo echad v'zebor lo echad. So then why does it say it the way it says it? Why doesn't it say it your way? It should say, kisha zebor lo echad, kisha zebor lo echad. It's not talking in the lashon of bidyevet, it's talking in the lashon lechadchila, this is actually what you should do. So, and we know they're not telling you should not want to go to his base and he should not want to go to yours, that's ridiculous. So the Gemara says, forget all of this. Again, it's a difficult havamina, but in the end, we did learn a number of dinim from it, so it's a very worthwhile endeavor. So now he says, rather, what does it mean? Ela hachi ka'amar. And he just takes off the kisheh, because obviously it needs to be off. Zebor lo dayan echad, zebor lo dayan echad, shneim borim lahem, od echad. He chooses 1 dayan, the other one chooses another dayan, and then according to Reb Meir, the 2 litigants choose a third dayan together. And according to the Chachamim, the 2 dayanim choose a third dayan. Well, that's nice, that makes sense. And then the Gemara just adds something at the end. Maishna da avdei hachi. So why are they doing this? So Amri b'mar Rava mishmeid Reb Zeira mitok shezebor lo dayan echad zebor lo dayan echad b'shneim borim lo od echad yetze adin la'amito. Because of this system, the din will come out la'amito. It'll be completely true din. So we'll have to figure out what that means. But just a couple of questions. Number one, like we said before, why on earth would you choose to first explore the possibility that Zebor lo Echad is talking about choosing a whole Beis Din? Did anyone, when you read that Mishnah, you thought it was talking about he chooses a whole Beis Din?
Maybe it's sequentially. Maybe you go to the first Beis Din. If it stops, if they can't reach it, then you choose.
Right. So that. Right, but that's already meaning. Usually, when a Bezin can't come to a Psak, they'll bring in into that Bezin. They'll bring in more Dayanim. What? They'll bring in more Dayanim. But like to say, like the better way to learn the Mishnah that I'm going to choose first is this weird Havamina that like he chooses three and he chooses three, and then we're going to choose another three. Ad kidei kach, the Rashi says they really thought it meant nine Dayanim. Why? Why would I choose to learn this way when then when the Gemara is like, oh yeah, it's talking about pick a dayan, and then we'll get the third dayan, and we have ourselves a normal Beis Din. Saying, why wouldn't we just go with the maskana first? And second of all, we asked the question, Maishna da Avdi Hachi, after we already had this discussion. Why didn't we ask this question before? Why are we doing this? What's wrong with just saying, you live in Cedarhurst, you go to the Beis Din of Cedarhurst. Right? Finished. I'm saying it's mashma here that even if you both live in Cedarhurst, you can fight over going to the Beis Din of West Hempstead. Why is that? And the last question is just, what does this mean that the din will be more emistic? So just to answer the third question first, Rashi says, what does it mean that the din will be more emistic? It's the pretty much in the middle of the Rashi. It's Yetzia din la emes lamita. He actually adds an emes in there. Ditzaisi bale dinin disavar achayev hareani ba'atzmi birarti ho'echod. They're going to listen to the psak, right? Normally, whether you're a little kid or whether you're an adult, whether you're engaged in a pickup game of basketball or a major court case, what's the reason you lost? It's always because the other guy cheated, right? Nobody ever lost anything. Nobody ever fouled anybody. Nobody ever stole from anybody. It's always because the other guy cheated. Right, so here you're not going to claim the other guy cheated. He says, "Why not?" Because he's going to say, "Hare ani ba'atzmi birarti ha'echod v'imhaya yochel lahapich v'schusi oyim lahapich." This guy was playing for me, and not only that, but he had a role in choosing the third. So I could have had my 2/3 majority. I got my fair shot. And then the second thing, v'adayonim ba'atzma nochedaitin lahapich v'schoshneim v'pnei sheshneim birurim. And it's even easier for the dayonim to make their guy look good because he's the guy who selected them. So it's just prone. The emes that Rashi seems to be talking about is a twofold emes. Number one, that the guy himself will feel good about the psak. And number two, the dayonim will have an easier time of it. Because it'll be easier for them to explore all the zechuyos on either side. So that's a great question. So it sounds like from Rashi that not really, but nevertheless, there will be a little bit of a negia. You'll be a little nogeya bedover that this guy picked me. Mainly you're going to feel a little, you know, you're going to feel some goodwill towards this individual. And you're going to think, you know, can I help my friend out a little bit? And if not, then not. But like, you're going to feel good about, no, he's not, and we'll see, if we have time to see it inside, we'll see the rush. But in Rashi, it doesn't sound as if he's arguing your case, but Lemaisa, Dayanam are really supposed to explore every possible side of every claim that's made. And that's not always so easy, because we're human and we make up our minds a little too quickly, generally speaking. So here, it'll be a little bit easier for both parties to actually do their job because they feel a shayachus to the guy who appointed them. Exactly. Meaning, like, normally you hear an argument and it's human nature to say, like, oh, that guy's right. Right? But maybe we should do a little bit of a better job investigating the other guy's argument too. So here, their job was made a little bit easier. So in order to understand the first two questions, I wanted to suggest as follows. Why did the Gemara have such a Hava Amina that we're choosing a Beis Din of three, and he's choosing a Beis Din of three over choosing a Dayan? So my first thought was, well, there's a klal in general when we try to say a Chiddush. We say Tafasta Meru below Tafasta. You don't say the bigger Chiddush, you say the smaller Chiddush. When you're darshaning Psukim, if it's written in plural, how many is that? Two. You don't say, well, maybe it's 2 million. Maybe, but I know for sure it's two. So we have this din of Zavlo, Zebor lo Echad, right? Where's this din coming from? It's not in the Torah anywhere. Chazal instituted this idea of Zebor lo Echad as we're seeing in the Maskana, Kidei sheyetzei adin la'amito. Right? But in the Hanumin of the Gemara, we're not looking to say that Chazal brought in this huge chiddush that you can actually construct your own Beis Din. Mehechatesi, why would I think that you get to construct your own Beis Din? So I understand the Chazal wanted to make your life a little bit better. So they said, you can choose which Beis Din to go to. We're not going to force you to go to the Beis Din. You know, you go on MapQuest and you do a search for Batei Din, so you have to go to the one that comes up closest to your house. And if you go farther than that, you're violating it. No, we're going to say that you can choose. But to then start breaking up Dayanim and forming new Batei Din, why would I go there first? So first the Gemara assumes, no, Zebor Lo Echad means you could choose which Beis Din you go to. Then when the Gemara realizes that's clearly not what the Mishnah was talking about, they go to step two and they say it must mean that Yitaka can construct your own Beis Din. But we don't want to say the bigger Chiddush first. We want to say the smaller Chiddush first. That was my first idea, but I think you can say more than that. I think you can explain that what did we see was the reason for Zebor Lo Echad when it came to choosing a whole Beis Din? Was it because one Beis Din was better than the other? Pashtus is not. Pashtus is it was a din in proximity. Meaning, I want to go to the Beis Din which is more convenient for me. You go to the Beis Din which is more convenient for you. In terms of qualifications, if they're not a qualified Beis Din, there are kosher besuria and you could just reject it out of hand. So we're not talking about because one Beis Din was corrupt and one Beis Din was incompetent that we want to go. We were just saying that if it's Beis Din and Rav Huna and Rav Chisda, I can say, I want to go to Rav Huna, you want to go to Rav Chisda. Who's better, Rav Huna or Rav Chisda? I can't say. I can't tell you who's better. They're both Gedolei Amoraim. I'm going to say that Rav Huna's incompetent, Rav Chisda's the man? Like, it's ridiculous. So the Gemara's whole Havamina was, it's all a din in proximity. You're not judging the quality of the Batei Din. And if you're not judging the quality of the Batei Din, what reason and what right would you ever have to break one up? If we're all assuming that qualified Batei Din are all just that, so then you should go to the Beis Din as it's currently constituted. And the whole Din Zavla was just a takana, so you don't have, you know, gas mileage is expensive these days. You know, we don't want you to have to drive too far. We don't want you to have to go out of your way and miss a day of work, whatever it is. And the Havamina of the Gemara, that's what it was. And then the Gemara changes its tune and says, no, it's more than that. It's more than that. The Nidonim are going to complain about the competency of the Beis Din. They are going to complain that the Beis Din was crooked and that they didn't know what they were talking about and they don't know how to learn. Right? So that wasn't the Havamina. The Havamina was, the guy's going to say that about a qualified Beis Din? And the Maskana is, unfortunately, yes. Unfortunately, yes. That is our chashash, and that's why the Gemara waits till the end to say, so maishna davidachi, why are we doing this? What are we breaking up Batei Din for? It says, kidei sheyetzei adin la'amito. And Rashi says, lav dafka, because the din will be a better one, although that's a possibility as well. It's because we want to make shalom. It's because we don't want them to, we want them to walk out, like the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, when they come into your court, you look at them like they're both rishon, but when they leave, if they're makabel the din, even if one guy ripped off the other guy, if he was makabel, that's the psak of the Beis Din, you look at them both like they're tzaddikim. And we want more of that. We want people looking at the other guy like he's a tzaddik because he was makabel the din. So we want to set him up for success in advance that he should want to be makabel the din. And that's the pshat and zavla. So that's why we didn't start there. We started by thinking, that's really the pshat and zavla? No, the pshat and zavla is we want to make people's lives easier. And the maskana, it's like, no. We want to make people be makabel the din, and that's what it means. There should be shalom al Yisrael. We're not going to get to it tonight, but if you want to take a look on your own, there is a Yad Ramah which claims that the judge that you selected, it's the Ramah Tanan, goes on to the next page, that the judge that you selected does argue your case. And the judge, and basically it's two guys arguing for their litigant, and then the third party decides whose side he likes better. And the rush goes crazy about this. What? It's like two lawyers and a judge. Right. Right. And the Rush goes crazy about this. The Rush in Siman Bei is there. I put it on the, I underlined it there. He refers to people who understand Rashi in that vein. He's not Dafka talking about the Yad Ramah. He says, Mipnei sheyesh chesrei das, because there are those who are not too bright. They misunderstand Rashi, and they say that each guy is supposed to try to find some form of chicanery to try to back up his individual. And they said, ad kidei kach, that they hire ba'alei tachbulos, right? They hire tricksters and dishonest people to argue their cases. They're dying, v'tolenos some b'dibrei Rashi. He says, Rashi never meant that, and I'm here to tell you, the Yad Ramah never meant that either. Saying nobody says that you should ever advance a svara that you don't think is emes. It's just a question of how zealous you should be in fighting for your individual party. Right, everybody have a good evening.